Hello and welcome to the Torah Simcha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Aviva Orlean and today we will be studying Parshas Chukas. Our Parsha opens with the quintessential chok of Parah Aduma. A chok, of course, is a mitzvah for which we do not have a completely satisfactory logical explanation for its requirement. Zos Chukas HaTorah, asher tziva Hashem lemor, daber al b'nei Yisrael v'yikhu elecha Parah Aduma tmima, asher ein ba mum. Take for yourself, says Hashem, this completely red cow that doesn't have any blemish. The Torah then proceeds to tell us the laws of the Parah Aduma, the red cow, from which the ashes of this burnt cow purify those who are in contact with a dead body, with a mace. As we move on through the first perek of Parshas Chukas, the Torah tells us in Perek Yotes, Pasak Yodalad, Zos HaTorah, Adam Ki Amus Ba'ohel. This is the law of the Torah, a man who dies in the tent. This is the law that relates to a person, to death, to a person who dies. Although this mitzvah would seem to better fit in Sefer Vayikra, the Torah presents this mitzvah in our Parsha because its placement seems to relate to the conceptual aspects of the events in our Parsha. The Torah describes this mitzvah as Zos Chukas HaTorah. This is the law of the Torah instead of, perhaps, Zos Chukas HaParah. These are the laws, this is the law of the para. And therefore we are drawn to the notion that indeed, while there are many mitzvos of the Torah that indeed do have rational reasons, the Torah should be observed because of the mindset of a chok, which is that we observe all of the laws of the Torah because it's a decree from God, regardless of whether or not I understand it. Zos Chukas HaTorah, our observance of all of the Torah, should be due to the chok mentality because God commanded it. We then move on to the story of May Mariva, and the Torah prefaces the story of May Mariva with the death of Miriam. Vayavo b'nei Yisrael kol ha'eda midbar tzin b'chodesh harishon v'yeshev ha'am b'kadesh v'tamas shem Miriam v'tikaber shem. B'nei Yisrael, the entire congregation, came to the wilderness of Tzin in the first month, which was Chodesh Nisan. They stationed themselves at Kadesh. There Miriam died, and there she was buried. So it's Chodesh Nisan, but we do not know which year it is. Rashi tells us, kol ha'eda hashlema, shekvar mesu mesei midbar, ve'elu pershu l'chaim. This Eda that is referenced here is the Eda that will enter the land, hence the entire congregation, as the previous generation has died out as a result of the Chet Meraglim. The Eda here is expressly mentioned for life. Hence, we extrapolate that this took place, Miriam's death took place, in the 40th year. So we have traveled in time by 38 years from one parsha to the next, with nary a word about the events that transpired in between this time. This is a new generation, and the time is drawing near to enter the land. We don't have any kind of specific records from the Torah about those years in between, but we do know that within this span of time, there has been a lot of death, as the original generation has all passed on. Adam ki amus ba'ohel. There have been many of those scenarios in those 38 years. When we learn this parsha, we need to perhaps look at the events with a chok mentality. We learn of Miriam and Aaron's passing and of Moshe's act of hitting the rock and subsequently being told that he and Aaron cannot enter the land. The three leaders of Am Yisrael who lead B'nai Yisrael through thick and thin, whose very essence was so intertwined with the welfare of B'nai Yisrael, they got them to this point, and yet they can't enter Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't seem fair. Moshe's punishment of not being allowed entry into the land seems so harsh. How could it be that he can't enter Eretz Yisrael? When we think about this, it moves one to tears because our limited minds cannot fathom a Moshe Rabbeinu, an Aaron, Miriam being left behind. But that's where we come to Zos Chukas HaTorah. It's something that we can't wrap our heads around. Let's turn our attention to May Mariva and look at one aspect of this incident. But word to the wise, there are many varied explanations, and obviously we will not have time to even scratch the surface, but we will try to expand on one line of thought. Miriam's death is reported, and the very next pasuk we are told that there is a problem of water. There's a shortage, there's no water, there's a lack of water. V'lo haya mayim la'eda v'yikalu al Moshe v'Aaron. After Miriam's death, there was no water for the congregation, and they gathered, or more accurately, most probably, they bombarded Moshe and Aaron. V'yarav ha'am in Moshe, and the nation fought with Moshe. They wondered what the point of all this travel was, if they were going to die of thirst anyway. The well that sustained Bnei Yisrael for the past 49 years was no more, since its very existence, say Chazal, was in the Zechus of Miriam. And now Bnei Yisrael have a serious problem and lose control again as they are plagued by intense thirst. So just to get a mindset of what's going on here, recall that when we began Sefer Bamidbar, we discussed the Netziv's categorization of this Sefer as being divided conceptually into two sections. The beginning of the Sefer represented the generation that left Mitzrayim and witnessed and experienced Kriyas Yamsuf and lived on miracles, the Mun and the well. And the next part of the Sefer is the new generation who would ultimately transition to a more natural existence once they enter the land. Here in our Parsha is where we see this transition. And this transition is important to keep in mind when attempting to understand Mei Meriva and what exactly was Moshe's mistake and why Hashem decided that he would not be the one to lead the people into the land and why he would need to pass on the mantle of leadership to somebody else. There's a connection between the Parah Aduma, the death of Miriam, and Mei Meriva. First, Rashi tells us that the juxtaposition between the Parah Aduma and Miriam's death is that just as the Karban is Mechaper and atones for sins, so too does the death of Tzadikim. However, the Kli Yakar points out that instead of Bnei Yisrael mourning the death of this great leader, which really leads one to introspection and thereby brings us to a point of kapara, because we mend our ways when we engage in introspection, the Kli Yakar says her death came and went and no mourning or crying is reported by the Torah, implying that they simply did not appreciate her greatness. When she dies, the well dies with her, as it was in her zechus that Bnei Yisrael were sustained by the miraculous waters. They don't deserve the well if they don't appreciate who Miriam was. Now Bnei Yisrael were forced to confront her absence, and they had to come to the realization that the only reason they had this miraculous water source was because of Miriam. Imagine that all of these years they had this miraculous well and it became part of their routine. They began to take it for granted. And really, isn't that the case with so much of our lives? The daily hidden miracles that we have, don't we sometimes take them for granted? They never should be. We articulate our appreciation 3 times a day in our tefillos when we say, Modim anachnu lach. We are thanking Hashem, Al nisecha shebechol yom imanu, for the daily miracles that we have, that you have given us. The daily miracles of health, of shelter, family. When, God forbid, any of these suddenly disappears, we then appreciate what we have to its fullest. Klal Yisrael had Miriam in their midst for all this time. They had the water all this time, and they did not realize the greatness of Miriam. Miriam, who brought hope to an entire generation. Miriam, whose sense of optimism brought about Moshe's arrival in this world by encouraging her parents to remarry and spread the optimism to Klal Yisrael to continue bringing about the Jewish family. Despite the terrible conditions that they were in, Miriam, who stood by the water waiting to see what would happen to her brother, Miriam, who brought hope and sustenance to this generation, and it is only fitting that in her merit the people had their water source, a basic need of sustenance for any civilization. Miriam died, the mourning and crying is glaringly absent from this narrative, and they subsequently lose their water and are forced to confront the connection. Al tzad ha'onesh chasru ha'mayim, lefi shelo hespidu ha'kara'oi, says the Kli Yakar. They lost the well as a punishment for not properly mourning and feeling the loss of Miriam. Their life was about to change drastically, and this lack of water brought it all to the fore. This lack of water leads to Bnei Yisrael's terrible complaints to Moshe and Aaron, and in the middle of their mourning, the passing of their sister Miriam, the nation is parched and crazed from thirst, and makes demands of them. We know the story. Hashem tells Moshe to take his matah, and together with Aaron speak to the rock. Moshe does not speak to the rock, but hits the rock twice. The tragic consequences are that both Moshe and Aaron were told that they could not enter the land. A huge, devastating punishment. And the questions are many. What was the mistake? How is it possible that Moshe made this mistake? How is Aaron involved in all of this? One way of understanding Moshe's error relates to his lapse of understanding the needs of this new generation. The Netziv explains that when the well dried up, this was the beginning of the transition of the people to a more natural existence, and this weaning from the miraculous to the natural was a very difficult adjustment. He points out that their complaints involved more than just water. It was about the transition that they were in the middle of. They realized that they were on the verge of attaining their goal of entering the land, and they became nervous about this huge change. Major life changes, as we know, can be psychologically and emotionally taxing. The lack of water exacerbated this, and their complaining was really symptomatic of their overall fear of transition and their doubts as to how they would be able to function in a natural manner. Moshe became angry with the people and therefore had a lapse of judgment as to how to address their needs and teach them about life in the future land. When the well dried up, the water source stopped. Well, just as the well dried up with no water source, so will there be times in the future when they were in the land where the rain will not fall and they won't have water. And when that happens, what needs to be done? So this was a pedagogic opportunity for Moshe to teach the people how to live life in Eretz Yisrael. Instead of the water coming from a miraculous well, there will be water from the rain. Instead of man that falls from heaven daily, they will have to eat their bread from as a result of the work of planting and sowing the ground. Instead of their clothing growing with them and remaining intact, they will have to now sew their clothing. Instead of the miraculous clouds that formed a protective cocoon, they will have to build walls and dwelling places. This is how we function in the natural world. However, we cannot function without knowing that it all comes from God and that tefillah, prayer, and words of Kedusha, Torah, facilitate our livelihood, our well-being, and success. The land of Israel is not like Mitzrayim, whose waters come immediately. The rain falls as a result of prayer and connection to God, and absent that, there will be drought. Now was the time for Moshe to teach the people that one of the integral ingredients necessary for their future life in the land was that connection to God, was prayer. When Hashem tells Moshe to speak to the rock, he says, Kachas hamata, v'hakel es ha'eda, ata v'aron achicha, v'dibartem el hasela. Take the staff, gather the people, and you and Aaron speak to the rock, le'enehem, in front of them. Vidibartam el hasela may not necessarily mean speak to the rock, rather speak next to the rock. And le'enehem is highlighting that Moshe should do it in front of the people, meaning do it as a demonstration. And what type of speech? Shana alav perek achad v'hu motzi mayim min hasela. Teach the people, speak to the people, one chapter, meaning something from the Torah, and that will bring about water, says the Yalkut Shimoni. The Mishnah in Tanis relates that when there would be a shortage of rain, the people would gather and the leader of the community would say words of tochacha or a halacha, and then they would begin to pray and to fast. At May Meriva, Hashem wanted to teach Bnei Israel this method and to demonstrate to them that there is power in public tefillah, which they would need once they enter the land. This speaks to the need for a leader of this new generation to hone in on exactly what it is that this new generation needs, on the dynamics of this generation and how to best facilitate growth. 39 years earlier, there was also a need for water, and there Moshe indeed took the staff and hit the rock with the staff. Here, however, Moshe was told to take the staff, but to leave it aside and use a different method for Bnei Israel to witness. As the Yalkut Shimoni says, v'dibartem el hasela, v'hi kisem lo ne'amar, it doesn't say to strike it, amar lo, k'shehanar katan, rabo makeum lamdo. When a child is young, you may have to discipline him by spanking him. However, k'shehigdil b'dibor hum yasro, when a child matures, you can discipline him with words. Kach amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe, so said Hashem to Moshe. K'shehaya sela zeh katan hikisa oso, when this rock was small, you hit it. And this perhaps is an allegory to the people. The people were of a different generation. They were of a different mindset. And there you had to engage with them in a different manner. You hit the rock. Sheneemar v'hikisa b'tzor, aval achshav v'dibartam el hasela. Now I'm telling you to speak to the rock. Shana alav perek achad v'hu motzi Mayim min hasela. Use your words. Use your words in order to teach Klal Yisrael, to say words of Torah, to say words of tefillah. This is a new generation that needs a different approach. Do not use the staff. Hold the staff and let the people see the unused staff in your hands. Use your koach hadibor to pray, to say words of Torah. This will facilitate existence via natural means. Hashem tells Moshe he cannot enter the land after this tragic mistake. Why? Ya'an lo ha'emantem bi lahakdisheni le'enei b'nei Yisrael. Because you did not believe in me to sanctify me in front of the eyes of b'nei Yisrael. Does this mean lo ha'emantem that they didn't believe in God? Of course not. The sin was not that Moshe and Aaron themselves lacked belief, but rather that they had lost an opportunity to facilitate B'nai Yisrael's belief in the power of prayer and the need for prayer. It is for this reason that the people needed new leadership, and Moshe and Aaron could not enter the land. This, of course, does not fully explain Aaron's part in all of this, but that really is for a different time. There are many other approaches that attempt to shed light on this very enigmatic episode of Mei Meriva. However, we should be aware that many of the explanations still leave the reader with a sense of sadness, because with all of the explanations, we still can't wrap our heads around it. We would do ourselves a service, perhaps, to heed the words of the Ramban and realize, V'ha'emes ki ha'inyan sod gadol misisrei ha'Torah. This is one of the secrets of the Torah, and in reality, no explanation will be completely satisfying. We really need to use our chok mentality when studying this parsha, Zos Chukas HaTorah. It's also important to understand that when we speak of Moshe's missteps, we must do so with reverence and not with a cavalier attitude, because we are speaking of Moshe Rabbeinu, who spoke to Hashem panim el panim, who is a consummate servant of Hashem as well as advocate for his people. After the incident of Mei Meriva, as per the Netziv's characterization of this entire Sefer Bamidbar, events that occur are slowly transitioning to a more natural existence. Moshe asks to pass through the land of Edom, and permission was denied. But instead of Moshe responding and negotiating further, B'nai Yisrael respond and continue the negotiations. They do it themselves. Vayomra elav b'nei Yisrael b'mesilah na'aleh. Let us go up through a different path. This is a huge departure from the way things had been operating before this time. B'nei Yisrael were told that Moshe's role is ending, and this is the beginning of that realization. B'nei Yisrael respond, not Moshe. We learn of the passing of Aaron HaKohen, and his passing, according to Chazal, signaled the imminent end of the miraculous protection of the Anane HaKavod, the clouds of glory. And the next accounts of the various battles and the beginning of the conquest of the surrounding areas of the land of Israel make sense in this context. We see a slow transition to a more natural existence. There's a war with Canaan, and the people themselves pray directly to Hashem. Vayidor Yisrael neder la Hashem, vayishma haKehashem b'kol Yisrael vayitein hazaknani. We see B'nai Yisrael calling out to Hashem. Hashem listens to B'nai Yisrael. We have neither Moshe nor Aaron being the intermediary. This is the way to conduct ourselves in quote-unquote real life without open miracles. Prayer facilitates success. They are on the brink of a new era and need to adjust, and this is part of that adjustment. We then see B'nai Yisrael complaining about the rigors of travel again, and then snakes come to attack them, which, say Chazal, is because the protective barrier of clouds were absent since Aaron's death. Again, another part of that transition. The Parsha continues as the people pass through the Arnon Valley, and here a miracle occurs, where the Emorim who were waiting to ambush B'nai Yisrael were miraculously crushed by two mountain ridges, moving and crushing them to death. Then there's a short Shira, a song of praise that is sung at the initiation of the people themselves. Whereas we had in Parshas B'Shalach, Az Yashir Moshe u'B'nai Yisrael, says Shira Hazos, there Moshe and B'nai Yisrael, Moshe led Klal Yisrael in song. Here, at the brink of entering the land, we have Az Yashir Yisrael Es Hashira Hazos. Here, B'nai Yisrael initiate the song of thanks for the miracles. And the Parsha continues with battles against the Emorim and occupying of the land east of the Jordan. They are making their way towards their future land. Parshas Chukas is all about the transition and the weaning period away from their leadership, away from the miraculous existence. Weaning a child is both difficult for the parent and the child, as each experiences challenges with that paradigm shift. Here too, Moshe the leader, as well as the people, need to adjust to this new reality. The reality is a bittersweet one, as many transitions are. They are on the cusp of realizing their goal of entering the land as we close our parsha. Vayis'u b'nei Yisrael vayachanu b'arvos Moav me'ever liyarden Yericho. They are at the border of the land right opposite Yericho. This is an anticipatory time indeed, but with that, it's a bittersweet reality as well. They would ultimately enter the land without the triumvirate of Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, the children of Amram, whose essence was caring for and leading the people until this point. They would not be accompanying them to their final destination. One of the saddest moments recorded in all of Tanakh, in my opinion, is Moshe being told in Parshas Vezos HaBracha to look across at the land and see the land that he will not tread upon, all because of the incidents that happened in Parshas Chukos, because of his misstep with May Meriva. Vayomer Hashem Elav, Zos Haaretz Asher Nishbati LaAvraham LeYitzchak UleYaakov LeMor LeZaracha Etnena. Hashem told Moshe, "This is the land. Look out at this beautiful land that I promised to Avraham, to Yitzchak, and Yaakov that I would give to his children." Her Isicha BeEinecha. I have allowed you to see it with your own eyes. Vishama lo ta'avor, but you will not cross into the land. The pathos is palpable. Despite all of the explanations, to our finite mind, it does not seem fair, and Moshe's mistake in this parasha doesn't seem to fit the consequences. But that is because we are human, and we really can't understand God's decrees in its entirety. Yet, we recall how we began the discussion of this parasha, Zos Chukas HaTorah. We follow, we learn, we analyze, we move forward despite the challenges. This is a chok that we perhaps cannot wrap our heads around. But we move forward because the challenge is what strengthens us and propels us forward. Wishing everybody a wonderful week. Thank you for studying together with the OU Women's Initiative.